Check out HelloVanessaMedia.com. Check out store.HelloVanessaMedia.com. Subscribe on Rumble, YouTube, follow on podcasting platforms, and LinkedIn. Hi, my name is Vanessa Leck, and today's video slash podcast are going to be about the I Am Vanessa Guillen Act that has been passed by Congress and is waiting to be signed by President Biden currently. I was unaware the progress that I had made up until today, and I'm doing this podcast slash video because of how timely this really is. So I'm going to go ahead and jump right into it. I kind of thought about how am I going to present this information. And I thought about doing it maybe by showing a news article, because I read a couple news articles about it. And I thought about maybe instead showing the actual legislation. And that's actually what I have decided to do in order to basically kind of get to the meat and bones of it, so to speak, as I share my thoughts. I am not a lawyer, just to be clear. I've not been to law school, but I don't think that you have to be a lawyer or go to law school in order to read. And certainly not to read legislation or bills that are pending in Congress that affect people. So I have a lot of knowledge and experience with the topics that the bill covers, which are basically related sex-related offenses, such as sexual harassment and or sexual assault. So yes, those are the topics already covered. I am not planning on getting into any graphic detail here, but those topics alone could be so just upsetting to people that you may just want to tune out right now. So this is your disclaimer about that. Otherwise, I'm going to go ahead and proceed. So just to give a little bit of context, so in 2020, when everything else was just going haywire around the world, and there's always wild things going on around the world, the situation at Fort Hood, Texas was developing with regard to Vanessa Guillen. I am not going to be covering that in depth. I have no intentions of covering that. I don't cover true crime or anything of that nature. And I prefer to avoid talking about like violent topics because I find it so distressing, disturbing. If you want to learn more about Fort Hood, Texas and Vanessa Guillen, those topics, they have been widely covered in great depth with a myriad of different opinions. And you can just find that anywhere online, basically. But I'm going to cover HR 8270. The Vanessa, I Am Vanessa Guillen Act, which has just passed through Congress in the last couple of days and is headed to be signed by the president potentially. It has not yet been signed, thus it is not yet law. However, due to the hot topic around this, I suspect it more likely than not will be signed. That's just my opinion. I could be wrong, but that's my opinion about it. Okay, so as you can see, if you're watching the video, I actually have the super dry reading material up in front of me and in front of you, so you can take a look at it if you want. And I also have links directly to a news article that kind of covered it, as well as to the actual legislation itself, in the description of wherever you're listening or watching this right now. All right, so this is a total of 29 pages. So it's a pretty lengthy piece of legislation. It's not the shortest one I've ever seen. It's not the longest piece of legislation I've ever seen. The shortest piece of legislation I've ever seen, I think, was like one or two pages. And I was actually surprised. I do with veterans health topic. And then the longest I've ever seen has to do with HIPAA. And that was, I want to say, around 100 pages. Okay, so right here, I'm just going to cover some of the things that catch my attention. This is the first time I've looked at this, just to be clear. So just be aware of that. Like, this isn't something that I've studied and I just found out about it today. Anyways, it says modification of authority to determine to proceed to trial by court martial on charges involving sex-related offenses. Again, this is something I've direct experience and knowledge of. I'm not going to get too much into that, but I have done podcasts and video kind of covering a surface level of these topics related to the military. And you can find that, you know, everywhere I am online, I cover that at the beginning and end of every video. And you can check that out if you're interested. Okay, so basically, to give a quick overview of what this bill is about before I start going page by page and kind of looking at it, basically, it's supposed to take the authority out of the military chain of command with regard to investigation or decisions to court-martial and proceed with disciplinary action against a military service member for sexual harassment or sexual assault, aka what they allude to here, sex-related offenses, is what it says in the legislation above here. All right, and so for those of you that are veterans that are watching this, which I know a number of you are, you don't need any explanation. But as a courtesy, I'm just going to quickly tell people that have no idea about the military what on earth I'm even talking about, because there's several things I've just said that people that a lot of people aren't going to know what I'm talking about. Okay, so in the military, it is totally different from the civilian world. There, in the civilian world, you have the police department, and they would take a police report about an alleged offense, right? And then there would be, you know, a prosecutor involved, and they would make decisions based upon the information provided to them by the police department as to whether or not they're going to prosecute that case and take it into a court system in the civilian world. And the military world is totally different. I mean, stunningly so. I remember when I first joined the military and began to really wrap my mind around how things were handled, I was really, it was really shocking to me. So anyways, in the military chain of command have wide latitude of decision-making authority on a wide range of topics to include, but not limited to, criminal matters. And whether or not they're going to be investigated, and whether and how they're going to be investigated, and if any action will be taken against the alleged perpetrator that engaged in the alleged incident or whatnot. They also have other areas like CID, Criminal Investigations Division, I believe is the acronym. I think that's what it stands for. Might be messing that up because I'm terrible with memorizing all the acronyms. There's way too many in the federal government. And so they may get involved in certain instances. But historically, and I did a video about this, and this is what this legislation is going to allude to and really talk about at length, most likely, I'm anticipating, is that the military chain of command had the ability and historically has been proven to, in some instances, through news reports and whistleblower claims and whatnot, to cover up, you know, criminal offenses. I have had that direct experience when I was in the military. And I can get into that in great detail, but I directly experienced that in my direct life experience. So I know that this stuff can happen, and it does happen, and it has happened, and it has been evidently quite widespread because there have been many people coming out about this in recent years. And so this piece of legislation is basically aiming to address those issues, but I will get into kind of my critiques about that here in a minute. But first, I'm going to cover a little bit of whatever this says in here. Okay, it says role of office of the chief prosecutor in determination to proceed to trial on charge involving sex-related offense. Referral and determination by office of the chief prosecutor. And then it gets into a great deal of detail, which I'm not going to be reading. You can see this if you're watching the video and reading along. And you can go to the link and read every single detail of it. But basically, this piece of legislation, based upon what I read already in the news, is seeking to take the authority, the decision-making authority, investigative authority, out of the chain of command for the purpose of sex-related offenses and to make a special office where, I'm guessing lawyers would be running it as prosecuting authority to investigate and make decisions about this. This is going to keep these people insanely busy. I wonder how much this is going to cost, and I don't know how effective it's going to be. These are already some of the thoughts I have in my mind. They're kind of coming out about this, and I'd like to see how it's going to play out in real time. Knowing what I know about the government, I think it's going to be... I just can already anticipate what the problems are going to look like in the coming years, and it won't be until news reports come out about that and people start talking, that it will be known for sure one way or the other how things are going. Okay, it talks about basically, in the cases of charges related to sex-related offenses, in addition to referring the charge to the staff judge advocate, aka JAG, the convening authority shall refer, as soon as reasonably practicable, the charge to the office of the chief prosecutor of the armed force of which the accused is a member to make the determination required by paragraph 3. Don't know where that is at, if they already passed it or not. The actions of the office of the chief prosecutor under the subsection, whether or not to try charges by court-martial, shall be free of unlawful or unauthorized influence or coercion. So it's supposed to be like an independent, unbiased third party that will make decisions about sex-related offenses in the military moving forward. And also it's supposed to, I read, based upon statements from members of Congress that have, you know, commented on this piece of legislation, that basically they hope that this piece of legislation, some members of Congress, will encourage more service members, I'm assuming, because I think that's what this is intended for, if I'm not mistaken, to basically come forward and report sex-related offenses, and also be free of retaliation, which has been a really big issue. I also have had direct experience with that as well in the military. So it is a really big issue, and it has been heavily widespread because many people have come forward talking about that. So I'm scrolling here to try to kind of catch the highlights here. So the office of the chief prosecutor shall make a determination regarding whether a charge relating to a sex-related offense should be referred to trial. And then they get to also, evidently, the office of chief prosecutor make a determination about how they're going to go about that, whether or not they're going to do it by a general court-martial or a special court-martial. So they repeatedly, I feel like it's repeating itself over and over again, which I feel like that happens a lot in legislation. Okay, it says a determination under paragraph 3 not to proceed to trial on a charge relating to a sex-related offense by general or special court-martial shall not operate to terminate or otherwise alter the authority of commanding officers to refer such charge for trial by summary court-martial convened under section 824 of this title, article 24, or to impose non-judicial punishment in connection with the conduct covered by the charges authorized by section 815 of this title. That is super interesting. So I'm going to reread part of this again. Basically, it looks like to me that they're saying that, like, if the office of prosecutor chooses not to pursue it, that it appears that it says that shall not operate to terminate or otherwise alter the authority of commanding officers to refer such charge for trial by summary court-martial. So basically they're saying it sounds like the chain of command will still have some authority, but in a really positive way, to where, like, I'm assuming based upon what I'm reading, but I could be wrong here, that they'll get the results of the investigation and based upon that information can choose to pursue that on their own authority, which they'll still have evidently to some extent, and they could potentially bring that to some type of UCMJ, Uniform Code of Military Justice, and could basically take some form of disciplinary action. So that is really interesting. Never heard of that, never thought of that before. That's really new. It says nothing in the subsection shall be construed to alter or affect the disposition of charges under this chapter, the Uniform Code of Military Justice, that allege an offense triable by court-martial under this chapter for which the maximum punishment authorized under this chapter includes confinement for 1 year or less. Okay, it says that allege an offense triable for which max. So, yeah, I don't really quite understand that paragraph. It says does not apply to the Coast Guard when it is not operating as a service in the Department of the Navy. Okay, that's interesting. Appointment of chief prosecutors is on page 5 of 29 for any armed force other than the Coast Guard for which the position of chief prosecutor does not exist. As of the date of the enactment of this act, the judge advocate general of that armed force shall establish the position of chief prosecutor and appoint as the chief prosecutor a commissioned officer in the grade of 06 or above who has significant experience prosecuting sexual assault trials by court martial. Oh my gosh, that's really good news. So basically, they're making it to where the people involved, it looks like to me, would have significant experience in sex offenses. And so I have a lot of different thoughts about this already. I've been trying to kind of hold back on some of it because I want to try to get through as much of this as possible. And it's 29 pages, so I don't think I'm going to get through all this at all. But basically, you know, when I worked at the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, I saw firsthand how the federal government is not great at upholding people's civil rights. Like, my direct experience was, and I just did a lot of research basically through my own experiences, and I covered this in depth in a podcast and videos about, you know, how my civil rights were violated when I worked at Veterans Affairs, Veterans Health Administration specifically, and how nothing, there was never any accountability or justice for that, despite the fact the laws were violated. And I did everything legally, like, I followed the rules basically to try to enforce my civil rights, and it didn't work out. Like, I didn't even go to a hearing because I felt like it was such a waste of time. And, you know, I did cover that in depth. So if you want to see more about that, I encourage you to check that out. I did a big long thing covering. I plan on doing more in the future in articles, most likely in videos and podcasts. Anyways, but I'd said one of my thoughts and suggestions were, I don't know if I said this publicly or not, but I'm going to now, and I'm planning to in the future, is that there are so much like sex offenses happening at Veterans Health Administration by their own admission, by the way. The current secretary of the VA has admitted and acknowledged that there is like a problem with like sex offenses at the organization going both ways, meaning veterans to employees, employees to veterans. Like, it's going both ways. And it's been covered to some extent in the news media. And I really feel strongly the way they've been handling it is wrong. And they need to bring in people that actually are experienced in dealing with this type of illegal behavior, essentially, instead of the way they're handling it through Office of Resolution Management, which is a nightmare. And the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission as well. They are not doing a good job either. The other concern I have when I look at this piece of legislation as a whole is that it really focuses on sex-related offenses, which I understand, I respect, I get it. But at the same time, there's a lot of other, you know, illegal behavior happening, such as what about physical assaults? What about military hazing? These are things that happen. You know, what about psychological abuse and verbal abuse and harassment? You know, there are other types of behaviors that occur that are extremely damaging and harmful that are not covered by this act, and that chains of commands in the military will absolutely have a full authority over still yet in many cases. And, you know, in my experience when I was in the military, you know, there was a lot of covering up and a lot of hiding of things that should not have been. Of course, years later, having done so much research on these topics, I now understand exactly to what extent in the gravity of the situations that I was facing. And I have concerns that basically those things will still continue to occur. Okay, because of the limited nature of this legislation. Another issue I have with the legislation, as with any legislation in the federal government that I've observed, is what about the enforcement of the laws? You know, a law is a law, but if it's not enforced, it's like, it's just like, what good is it really? And so I wonder, you know, how will this be enforced and how will it play out? And in the years and months and years to come, we're going to see that. And that will likely be played out in the public sphere, in the news. This will be reported on, and we will all know for sure. Okay. All right, I'm going to kind of scroll through this. It says, no exercise by officers in chain of command of accused or victim, page 7 of 29. It says an officer specified in subsection A8 may not convene a court-martial under this section if the officer is in the chain of command of the accused or the victim. Okay, so that's just really confusing because I thought I read on page 3 or 4 that they were saying that the chain of command did not have their authority taken away if the special prosecutor chose not to pursue it. So I don't know if I misunderstood that or if they meant that like someone else at a lower rank could possibly take action after the fact. I'm not quite sure. I'm actually confused by this now. So I'm on page 8. I'm scrolling around. This is just extremely detailed. It's so detailed. And normally I would review this in advance of a live stream, but I decided to hop on. So like if it's ever going to get done, it's going to need to get done now. All right. It says effective date on page 9 of 29 and applicability. All right. The amendments made by the section shall take effect on the first day of the first month beginning after the 2-year period following the date of the enactment of this act. Huh. First day of the first month beginning after the 2-year period following the date of the enactment of this act. That's such a weird way to write that. It's so confusing. They have a punitive article on sexual harassment related investigation matters. Okay, they define as sexual harassment, which I'm not going to get into. That was on page 10 and 11. It really gets into great detail about this. So it's on page 13. They actually spend literally a few pages on this, so. Oh, gosh. Okay, page 14. Complaints of sexual harassment, independent investigation. Action of complaints alleging sexual harassment. A commanding officer or officer in charge of a unit, vessel, facility, or area of an armed force under the jurisdiction of the Secretary of the Military Department who receives from a member of the command or a member under the supervision of the officer, a formal complaint alleging sexual harassment by a member of the armed forces shall, as soon as practicable, after such receipt, forward the complaint to an independent investigator. I love the words independent investigator, but like I've just seen from working at Veterans Health Administration that like that didn't happen. Commencement of investigation. To the extent practicable, an independent investigator shall commence an investigation of a formal complaint of sexual harassment not later than 72 hours after receiving a formal complaint of sexual harassment forwarded by a commanding officer or officer in charge under subsection A or 2, receiving a formal complaint of sexual harassment directly from a member of the armed forces. And okay, so I have several thoughts here. Okay, so my first thought is 72 hours, that is like lightning speed in government time, okay? And really anywhere when it comes to, and even the civilian world when it comes to dealing with like HR matters of any kind, human resource matters. That's amazing. Like when I worked at Veterans Health Administration, I literally waited almost a year. I was actually quitting my job when they finally got around to quote unquote investigating what happened. And it was just a huge cover up. When I was in the military, you know, when I reported some different things, which I'm not going to get into, there was never any meaningful investigation that took place. I was never updated on what the outcome was or the status was. I did deal with retaliation. According to my understanding of what the news is reporting on this legislation, survivors would be like they would have to keep survivors informed about the status of the investigation and the outcome of the investigation. I have not read that in here yet, but that's my understanding of what's supposed to happen. And certainly 72 hours is like record speed. I just wonder how they're going to keep up with all this, because this is a very demanding occupation for the people involved in this. And it's going to take a ton of resources. And I just wonder if they're like prepared on any level for the demands that are about to be made upon them to like follow the law, basically. And I see a lot with Veterans Health Administration, where like the Deborah Sampson Act, I covered that in great detail. I know as a fact that my local VA has not been conforming to those requirements. All of them, I did report that to the Office of the Inspector General, and I got a letter, which I read on air, basically saying, I'm paraphrasing my words, not theirs, but basically saying that like they need to be given a reasonable amount of time to conform with the law. And it's like, well, why do we have a law if we're not going to follow the law? You know, it's just ridiculous. So we'll see what happens with this. Duration of investigation, page 1429, to the extent practicable, investigation under subsection B shall be completed not later than 14 days after the date on which the investigation commences. What? That is so fast. That is so fast. Okay, I'm really surprised about that. Okay, again, this is very demanding. I just wonder if they're going to be able to keep up with all these investigations. Because if service members actually have a phone number or an email or a way to independently report this, which it sounds like they're going to, based upon what I'm reading so far, then that's going to be a lot to handle. That's like a lot of reports that are about to be incoming. So I am going to be keeping my eyes peeled to see how this plays out. I'm very curious. Okay. D, report on command investigation to the extent practicable. An independent investigator who commences an investigation under subsection B shall, 1, submit a final report on the results of the investigation, including any action taken as a result of the investigation, to the officer described in subsection A not later than 20 days after the date on which the investigation commenced, or 2, submit a report on the progress made in completing the investigation to the officer described in subsection A not later than 20 days after the date on which the investigation commenced, and every 14 days thereafter until the investigation is completed, and upon completion of the investigation, then submit a final report on the result of the investigation, including any action taken as a result of the investigation, to that officer. Wow, that's a lot. Okay, so, all right, so I thought I read that things were supposed to conclude, the investigation was supposed to last and be concluded within 14 days, but now it sounds like basically, that's not the case, that they can take longer than 14 days, but then they have to provide regular updates ongoing, basically, every so many days thereafter. So, honestly, it doesn't really surprise me, because, you know, these things can be so complicated, depending upon the severity, the duration, the number of people involved. I mean, this is something that could take months and months to conclude investigation, just depending. It may not be a simple matter. And then the logistics of trying to coordinate interviews and possibly travel to certain sites. I mean, that sounds like a job and a half. All right. Then it gets into basically defining everything, which you just got to love lawyers who just do that. And most of our legislators are lawyers, to the best of my knowledge. And my God, there's so much here with definitions. Okay. So they're defining. They're typing. There's so much here. Okay, so report implementation, page 17 of 29. This is of interest to me. Not later than 9 months after the date of the enactment of this act, each secretary of a military department shall submit to Congress a report on preparation of that secretary to implement the amendment to section 1561 of such title made by this subsection. Super interesting. The Veterans Affairs Organization, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs and Veterans Health Administration, well, specifically Veterans Affairs, sorry, they're routinely required to report back about legislation they're supposed to be answering for. So, for example, the Deborah Sampson Act is a great one. It has to do with women veterans. They are supposed to report back. And I just, yeah, would like to know how that's going. Confidential reporting of sexual harassment. Oh, this is very important. Confidential reporting of sexual harassment establishment, notwithstanding Section 1561 of this title, the Secretary of Defense shall prescribe regulations establishing a process by which a member of an armed force under the jurisdiction of the Secretary of a military department may confidentially allege a complaint of sexual harassment to an individual outside the immediate chain of command of that member. Receipt of complaint. And in page 17 of 29 still, an individual designated to receive complaints under subsection A shall maintain the confidentiality of the member alleging the complaint. Two, shall provide to the member alleging the complaint the option A, to file a formal or informal report of sexual harassment, and B, to include reports related to such complaints in the Catch a Serial Offender program. Never even heard of that before. I did not know there was a Catch a Serial Offender program. It may have been explained. Like, that actually may have been explained to me by people I've spoken to that are actively involved in sex offense programming prevention. But I'd never heard that title before. Catch a Serial Offender program. Like, ever. Never heard that before. All right. Shall provide to the commander of the complaint and... So basically the person bringing the complaint, a report regarding the complaint, and B, that does not contain any personally identifiable information regarding the complainant. Interesting. Education tracking. The Secretary of Defense shall educate members under the jurisdiction of the Secretary of a military department regarding the process established under this section and track complaints alleged pursuant to such process. Reporting, the Secretary of Defense shall submit to the Committees on Armed Services of the Senate and House of Representatives an annual report containing data that does not contain any personally identifiable information relating to the complaints alleged pursuant to the process established under this section. All right, then it gets to more just stuff I don't really want to read. Page 19, 29, implementation. Okay, this is interesting. Page 1929, section 5, in big bold letters, caps, it says, authorization of claims by members of the armed forces against the United States that arise from sex-related offenses. Wow. Okay, this is interesting. Claims arising from sex-related offenses, page 19 of 29. In general, consistent with this section and under such regulations as the Secretary of Defense shall prescribe under subsection, the Secretary may allow, settle, and pay a claim against the United States for personal injury or death of a claimant arising from, one, a sex-related offense committed by a covered individual, two, the negligent failure to prevent a sex-related offense committed by a covered individual, or three, the negligent failure to investigate a sex-related offense committed by a covered individual. Wow. Okay, that is a bombshell. I did not know that was in here. So I had been hearing some talk and speculation about legislation coming forth regarding the ability for people and lawyers to bring forth legal claims some way or somehow against the Department of Defense, some way, somehow, or I guess the military branch, some way, somehow, for some type of monetary compensation with regard to these types of sex-related offenses, right? I had no idea. I didn't think it had actually been passed or written. I did not know, because they can talk all day about all kinds of things. You know, people can, Congress can, and then nothing ever happens. So I'm really surprised about this. I guarantee you we are about to see, if this passes, a plethora of commercials from lawyers seeking clients that would like to pursue these types of claims. So get ready for that. Those commercials are going to be everywhere you and I are. They're going to be on TV. They're going to be online. They're going to be everywhere, I predict. Because I already see advertisements from lawyers like that for other things that have hit the headlines in recent years. Okay. Requirement for claims, page 20 of 29. A claim may be allowed, settled, and paid under subsection A only if, one, the claim is filed by the claimant who is the victim of the sex-related offense, or by an authorized representative on behalf of such claimant who is deceased or otherwise unable to file the claim due to incapacitation, two, the claimant was a member of an armed force under the jurisdiction of the Secretary of a military department at the time of the sex-related offense, three, the claim is presented to the department in writing within 2 years, so there's a statute of limitations here, after the claim accrues, four, the claim is not allowed to be settled and paid under any other provision of law. And five, the claim is substantiated as prescribed in regulations prescribed by the Secretary of Defense under subsection D. Whew, that was a lot to read. Okay, so that, I mean, we'll see if it gets passed, but I mean, I think it's probably going to get passed. That's my prediction, speculation, my opinion here. But I'll be surprised if it doesn't, because this has been such a hot topic now for about 2 years, roughly. Okay, page 2029, payment of claims. One, if the Secretary of Defense determines pursuant to regulations prescribed by the Secretary under subsection D, they claim under this section in excess of $100,000 is meritorious. Don't know if I butchered that word. Sorry if I did. And the claim is otherwise payable under this section, the Secretary may pay the claimant $100,000 and report any meritorious amount in excess of $100,000 to the Secretary of the Treasury for payment under Section 1304 of Title 31. Okay. All right, so... yeah, this is just really interesting. This is really interesting stuff here. It says uniform standards consistent with generally accepted standards used in a majority of states in adjudicating claims under Chapter 171 of Title 28, commonly known as the Federal Tort Claims Act, to be applied to the valuation, settlement, and payment claims under this section without regard to the place of occurrence of the sex-related offense giving rise to the claim or the military department of the covered individual, and without regard to foreign law in the case of claims arising in foreign countries, including uniform standards to be applied to determinations with respect to. Okay, so it just goes on and on with the legal lingo here. It's basically talking about a lot of legal stuff. It's talking about people that are deployed in combat zones and non-combat zones in foreign countries where a sex offense may have occurred, and all the legalese related to that. It's talking about the legalese related to people where a sex offense may have occurred or did occur in a state. And it goes into great detail about the legalities of that, which are quite a lot, it looks like. It talks about limitations on attorney's fees. Now, this is super interesting. Page 23 of 29. Limitations on attorney's fees. No attorney shall charge, demand, receive, or collect for services rendered fees in excess of 20% of any claim paid pursuant to this section. Interesting. Okay. That is so interesting. So they put a cap on attorney's fees, because a lot of times contingency cases in America, I've seen and heard, lawyers will collect like a third of the money plus additional expenses incurred that they claim. So they really are capping it. They're capping it. And so I'm not sure if that really is a true cap, like 20% period, and you can't charge for pencils that were used to write the claim, or I don't know. I don't know if that really is 100. I don't really know if that's 20% total cap or not. I'm really curious about that. That's really interesting. That's the number. That's a paragraph that's going to be closely analyzed by lawyers looking at taking these cases, guaranteed. Okay, any attorney who charges, demands, receives, or collects for services rendered in connection with a claim under this section, any amount in excess of the amount allowed under paragraph one, if recovery be had, shall be fined, not more than $2,000. Imprisoned, not more than 1 year or both. Oh my gosh, so they're like really serious about this. They're like not messing around. Oh man, I've never read anything like that before. It's really interesting. It's page 23 of 29. This just keeps getting more interesting as I go along. And I actually thought I would not read this far, but I have. And yeah, the United States should not be liable for any attorney's fees of a claimant under this section. Interesting. Page 23 of 29. Okay, so annual report not less frequently than annually until 2026, the Secretary of Defense shall submit to the Committees on Armed Services of the Senate and the House of Representatives a report indicating the number of claims processed under this section. This should be interesting. This should be very interesting. Oh my gosh, I'm going to have to tune into that hearing. Indicating the resolution number 2 of each such claim and number 3, page 24, 29, describing any other information that may enhance the effectiveness of the claims process under this section. Then it goes into even more legalese definitions, which I'm not reading. Like, you can totally read that on your own time. I'm going to go to sleep if I read all this legal stuff, legalese. Okay. Huh. Effective date and transition provision. The amendments made by the section shall apply to any claim filed under section 2733B as in Bravo of such title as added by subsection A1 on or after January 1st, 2021. Transition number 2. Any claim filed in calendar year 2020 shall be deemed to be filed within the time period specified in, okay. Huh. All right. All right, page 25, 29, section 6, reports on sexual harassment slash assault response programs of the armed forces. Secretary of Defense report, in general, not later than 180 days after the date of the enactment of this act, the Secretary of Defense shall submit to Congress a report on the sexual harassment slash assault response programs of each military department. Huh. Elements. The report required by paragraph 1 shall include the following. Okay, basically, kind of some generic information like description assessment. I'm summarizing here. Then it goes on to a comparative assessment. And then it goes, really breaks down in painful detail the structure and what's required. And it's quite a lot. Page 7 to 29, moving along. Okay, they talk more about reporting, basically reporting on sexual harassment slash assault response programs of the military departments. And it goes on to like the different elements of that. Then section 7, GAO, Government Accountability Office, study of members absent without leave or unauthorized absence. That's interesting. Page 27, 29. There's a report that's going to be filed about that. A study report, not later than September 30th, 2021. And it's basically talking about handling cases of members of the armed forces who are absent without leave or on unauthorized leave. I don't really know what this is about. Oh, I think I know what this is about. So basically, I think it's about military service members that have gone missing. And it even mentions on page 28 of 29, the cases that may involve foul play or accident. C, cases wherein the member may be in danger. And 3, the current guidelines for cooperation and coordination between military investigative agencies and A, local law enforcement agencies, B, tribal law enforcement agencies, and C, federal law enforcement agencies. 4, the current guidelines for use of traditional and social media in conjunction with such cases. 5, military resources available for such cases and any apparent shortfalls in such resources. Page 29, the very last one, half page here. How the procedures for such cases vary between military departments. How the procedures described in paragraph 6 vary from procedures used by local and federal law enforcement. Best practices for responding to and investigating such cases. any matter, any other matter the comptroller general determines appropriate. Oh my gosh, and that is it. Oh my gosh, I got through it. I got through it. I did. Okay, let me go ahead and make some adjustments here as I wrap this up. This has been a really long live stream today, which I wasn't anticipating. Okay, so I'm really surprised by everything I read today on this matter really related to the I Am Vanessa Guillen Act of 2020. I'm very curious to see if it passes. I speculate, and my opinion is it probably will, because it's already passed through Congress. I think it's going to be signed, but we'll see what happens. I'm even more curious once it passes, if it does, how this is going to play out. There's a lot of details in there that are going to be very game-changing. It's going to be really interesting with relation to policy development and implementation in the future, how all this works out. And, you know, last year, 2020, if you're following the events around Fort Hood, then you will know about the missing persons cases that were there. There were two different ones that were quite prominent at the time that were featured heavily in the news media. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, check it out, search it online. You can find out about it. I'm not going to cover it here. But it seems that that news media, which goes back to the power of news media and power of broadcasting and why I'm here right now with you, is really shaped this policy implementation, essentially, and crafted it. So I'm just really curious to see how all this is going to play out. Let me know your thoughts in the comments below. You can also leave a message for the podcast if that's of interest to you. Just know all of that is public or will be and could be included in a future segment. All right, so I wish you all the best, and I hope that you have a very happy holiday and Merry Christmas. Bye. Check out HelloVanessaMedia.com. Check out store.HelloVanessaMedia.com. Subscribe on Rumble, YouTube, follow on podcasting platforms, and LinkedIn.